for the organization and invitation. I think it's really nice to see the patterns appears in so many different places. Okay, and so the structures, or the title of my talk is Structures of a Local Minimizer of a One-Dimensional Variational Problem. Okay. And sorry that some of you might have heard this talk, but hopefully you'll be better this time. So now the whole talk exclusively is on this one-dimensional variational problem, okay. And it's a simplification. But then I think the mathematics is also in some sense quite interesting, and then eventually hopefully we can also extend it to some other dimensions too. So this functional has several terms, a higher order term. The first order term, and W is the double well potential, and I will be more explicit later on, and then the zero order term U square, and then for simplicity with the Norman boundary conditions. Okay. So now given a functional like this, from the point of view of a variational problems, you want to minimize this and study the structures of the stationary solutions. So the main result that I would like to present here is that for this particular functional, the stationary solutions of this functional with low enough energy, they are stable even only if they are periodic. So in some sense, at the level of low energy, all the local minimizers are periodic functions. Okay, so now if I plot it from a schematic using the energy landscape, so here's the function space, and presumably many people are interested in these structures of local minimizers, and the local minimizers exist. On the other hand, the interesting feature of this functional is that there are lots of local minimum, and the theorem is that the local minimums are all consist of periodic structures. Okay? And of course, to understand more about the energy landscape, then we'll also be interested in the unstable critical points too. So we are not able to have a complete characterization of the unstable critical points, but there are some results that I will indicate to you. Okay? So these are the main phenomenology of this functional. So and then as I would say no. It's, okay, sometimes when people try to do this Martin City transformation type of question, then the boundary condition might depend on there's a driving force, so then the U is D at some one point. So then, for obvious reason, the stationary point is not periodic. But then if you simplify it for Dirichlet or periodic boundary conditions, then it is true. Yeah. So there is this obvious modification such that the stationary point is not periodic. Yeah. So the outline of this talk, okay, so first of all, I will mathematically motivate why we are interested in doing this, and then again, the next one is that this function is initiated by also some kind of modeling and understanding of solid-solid transformation. Okay? And then I will give you an example of experimental results from dynamics. And then I will describe the results and the outline of the proof. And then if I have time, I will talk about this, some related issues about these dynamics. Okay? So now this talk, the function is somewhat related to what Stephen Watson has talked about. He concentrated on the dynamical issues, and here I will just concentrate on the time-independent problems. Okay? So a simple illustration as a math problem. So now if you look at this functional, just with the double well potential, W is sometimes take the fully nonlinear double well potential, or for simplicity, take the bistable, bilinear double well potential. Okay? So if you want to minimize this, the minimizers of these exist, and it's very easy to construct. You just take any function, with slope 1 and minus 1, and then any functions of this will obviously give you the low global minimum because the energy is zero. But on the other hand, there's a high degree of non-uniqueness. There's no way you can tell where are the critical points, where are the corners or some kind of a defect structures. So there's really no way from just looking at this functional you can tell how the structures look like. And this phenomenon has been observed long time ago by L.C. Young and Erickson. Okay. U sub x square. U sub x. Yeah, I should say. Yeah, that's right. Fourth order equation. No, you don't need another boundary condition. Once you okay, so if you minimize this, And then the automatically, if you look at all the Lagrange equation, we will give you an additional boundary condition. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the additional boundary condition is the use of x, x, x is equal to 0. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now this, all right. So this functional, the simple case is highly non-unique, has a non-unique global minimizers. So then we can play around, try to modify this functional. So you can add a lower order term and try to make the function, upon minimization, this U square will try to make U as small as possible. And for this function, it turns out that the minimizers does not exist, but then there is a minimizing sequence. And the way to construct this is also very simple. Take any function with slope 1 or minus 1, then the double well potential doesn't give you any contribution, okay, and with a certain oscillation. And to reduce the contribution from the U square, you decrease the L infinity norm of the function or make it more and more oscillatory. Okay, then in the end, as a limiting process, then the energy will drop down to zero. But then in the limit, this function converges to zero, but U identically equal to zero is not a minimizer. Yeah, because, okay, right now there's no higher order term, so that's fine, yeah, sure. So it's, switch back and forth with certain, since there's no higher order term, then that doesn't quite matter, yeah. Okay. So now for this functional, then in the limit of the sequence is not a minimizer. So this is a very well-known phenomenon because of the fact that this energy is not a lower semi-continuous. So, and of course, you can also describe this phenomenology using a Young measures by the fact that a slope will have a probability a 1/2 with 1 and then probably another 1/2 with a negative 1. Okay. So, but then if you want to insist working on a classical function space, you can have a higher order regularization. Okay, you add a second order term, and the effect of this is to penalize the rapid changes in use of x. So, still you try to give an answer of a reasonable minimizer, okay, so with slope 1 and minus 1, and then the higher order term is going to round off this corner, very similar to Steve Watson's picture earlier on. Okay, so then this corner is going to round it off. So with this, then by simple classical functional analysis, then the minimizers exist because the higher order term is convex in the variables. But then this resultant functional demonstrate interesting feature of the competition between two effects. One is the formation of fine scale structures, and the other is a regularization. There's an optimal compromise between these two effects. So this can be seen as in the following. So take reasonable candidates for minimizers with slope 1 and minus 1 with rounded off corners. And if the number of turns is small, then you have a small contribution from the higher order term, but a large contribution from the U square term, because the U is large. On the other hand, if you increase many terms, if you introduce more and more terms, then you have a small contribution from U square, but a large contribution from the higher order term. So now, for the optimum or the global minimizer, there must be an optimum compromise between these two. And it has been worked out quite precisely by Stefan Müller. He characterized the structures of the global minimizers, and he showed that for global minimizers, there's optimal scaling between the two corners, or between corners, and it is of the order of epsilon to the 1/3, and then the epsilon also, it turns out, is the width of these transition regions. Okay? So this problem introduces two small length scales, okay? And actually, if you believe that the picture I draw here is correct, so you have a slope 1 and minus 1, and assume it is periodic, it is very easy to see why epsilon why L scales like epsilon to the 1/3. Okay, so you can just cut and paste using computer energy of each periodic structures and opt and minimize upon L. Okay. So on the other hand, there's some, you can also play around with extra parameters. Okay, so there are some variants of this functional. Okay. Is that you can put a small parameter here. And it turns out the problem mathematically becomes simpler if alpha is equal to 1 or bigger, or alpha is bigger than 1, in the sense that you just renormalize the functional. Then this one, the second order term plus the first order term, and this by Peter Sternberg or Mortica Motilla theorem. This will gamma converge to the functional. We just count the number of points where U sub x changes between 1 and minus 1. And then U square is a continuous perturbation of this functional. So everything can be captured quite nicely using the theory of gamma convergence. Okay? But then if alpha is less than 1 or alpha is equal to 0, then this becomes a more singular perturbation of the previous functional. So it's not, it can, the theory of gamma convergence can also be done in some way. Actually, it's done by Stefan Müller and Alberto in one of their papers. But then it is not, certainly it is not as easy as in the case when alpha is big or equal to 1. Who? Yeah, they work in this regime alpha is equal to 1 or bigger than 1. So in this case, there's only one small scale parameters of epsilon. Yeah, but then in the present case, alpha is less than 1. So that... okay, yeah. I mean, there are some other... So there are some other variants that people study this function. So, yeah, I agree. And I also mentioned that I mean this U square right now is a local version, and then there may be some other non-local version of replacement of this term too. Yeah. Okay. So this is just some variants of the that you can play around. Okay. So this is mathematically that we would like to study the competition between regularization and then the formation of fine scale structures. Okay? So on the other hand, from the point of view of solid-solid transformation, in particular, the formation of a coherent interfaces in the regime of Martensitic transformation, this function also appears naturally. So you suppose you have a material under some stress conditions in the boundary, then the material is going to transform. Then let's say U is the displacement deformation and gradient of U is the deformation gradient. And people are interested in studying the equilibrium configuration of the minimizers or stationary solutions of these materials. Okay. And it turns out people also use this kind of double well or multiple well structures, functionals, trying to characterize the equilibrium configurations. And this type of functionals for the linear elasticity regime has been worked out by Khachaturian, Shatalov, and Rybert. And for nonlinear case, it's worked out by Ball and James. Okay. So this is also appears in the solid transformation. Okay. And then in particular, I will point out these following pictures. This formation of twinning microstructures in shape memory alloys like copper, aluminum, and nickel. And then for this Martensitic transformation of this material, they form coherent interfaces. And for this outcome, then you clearly see the multiple scale structures. One is the small length scale of these fine scale structures. And then on a larger domain, you also see another length scale of the larger patterns. And I think this is coming out of the thesis of Chu. So now for this kind of phenomena, we would like to know the patterns of our microstructures, and then the length scales associated with them, and then the evolutions of these patterns too. So certainly the higher dimensional problem is quite complicated. So we're concentrating in the one dimensional version. So now again, this is zooming between the interface between austenite phase and martensitic phase. Okay, so then the material is trying to transform from austenite to the martensitic phase, and there are two types of martensitic phases, and then they try to match up together. And the reason they form these microstructures is because they want to form the coherent interfaces between the different phases. And again, if you look at the interface, certainly two-dimensional effects is going to appear. But then away from the interface, then basically we can describe it from using the point of a one-dimensional picture. Okay? And Bob Kung and Stefan Müller also has a results analyzing the tuning structures near the two-dimensional interface. Okay? But right now, from this picture, we'll just emphasize or concentrate on the 1D picture. So now there's a one-dimensional toy model. So now here's let me just explain a little bit what are the effects of each term. So here is the the first order term, which this is described the deformation energy. U sub x is equal to 1 or minus 1 are the preferred transformation or preferred states of the phase. Okay. And the higher order term is can be used to model the interfacial energy. Even though the interface are coherent, there might still be some kind of energy associated with the interface. Okay? And mathematically, it also introduces length scale of the microstructures. Okay? So introduce additional length scale. And then the U square, now this is just mathematically, we just put it there to induce the microstructures. And you can also treat it like as interactions between the materials to be transformed and the substrate. Maybe the substrate does not want to be transformed, but then there are some elastical interactions. And certainly, you can replace this U square by many non-local functionals, for example, Wei and his co-authors, and then Truskinovsky and some other people also look at some non-local versions of this U square. But right now, mathematically, I just put it there so that has induced this formation of fine scale structures. So they are all, sure, I agree, there are all kinds of variations of these functionals that try to model this phenomenon. And of course, this is a 1D picture, and some people will try to deduce this one-dimensional picture from a fully 3D or 2D calculations. And in that case, if you really want to become more accurate, then these terms will in general become very non-local. Yeah. But this is, I think this is a very simple mathematical model and yet captures all the main phenomenology we would like to study. Okay, so now this is so far is a description of time-independent problem. For the time-dependent problem, and so I will just mention these experiments done by Abiran, Chu, and James. Again, they look at this transformation from austenite to a masternite phase. And they found out that the volume fraction of one of the phases is going to increase. So they introduce a very coarse grain description, lambda of t as a volume fraction. And experimentally, they observe that lambda, this volume fraction, stays at some specific value for a significant amount of time, stays there, and then with some disturbance from the background, then this lambda is going to jump to another value and stay there for some significant amount of time, and so forth. Okay? So to describe this, they introduce a very simple idea, and it describes the phenomenology quite well, is that introduce an energy functional for this one-dimensional variable with some macroscopic functional, and on purpose, they add in this small oscillations, high oscillation, but with small amplitude. And then they consider the negative gradient flow for this lambda. And because of this two epsilons canceled, then there's a very macroscopic effect on the energy profile. Okay, so then, let me just put it here. So from the energy landscape for this one variable, parameter, so then there's a macroscopic energy landscape. But then clearly, if you try to follow the gradient flow, you are not going to follow this energy landscape because there are lots of local minimum. And for sure, no matter where you start, you're going to get stuck. So as epsilon goes to zero, then the dynamics is not described by f of lambda, but then there's a flat region described by the existence of local minimum, and then there's some region that's going to flow down and get stuck. So the dynamics as epsilon goes to zero is far from clear immediately just looking at the original functional. Okay? And in this experiment, they even physically explain the reason why there is this local minimum is because when one of the phase try to increase their area, and then this really you need to look at a two-dimensional effect that there is a splitting of the tips. And in order for the one of the phase to increase area, you really need to do the tip splitting. And it is this tip splitting or the nucleation of new tips that corresponds to the local minimum or the waiting time that is observed in the experiments. Okay. But I think if you really want to study the fully higher dimensional version and time dependent problem, I think many questions need to be remains unknown too. Okay. So right now, so we'll just concentrate on the 1D and then the time independent problem. So to introduce the results, then we'll just recall some conventional definitions. So given here's a functional. And then the definition of stationary point is that the first variation vanish, and which corresponds to this Euler Lagrange equation. And for the stability, we look at the second variation, and we call U is stable if the second variation is positive, and U is unstable if the second variation is negative for some test function. Okay? And it turns out for this function, it takes some work to show, but then for this function, this notion of stability corresponds to the fact that U is a local minimum. So I'll just interchange the terminology of local minimizers and stable points. Yeah, it's H2, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I will, if I do some further simplification, the function space that for the stationary solution R will be automatically fall into some better function space. But then in terms of the definition, we just start from H2. Yeah, that's the most general functional because allowed by this original definition of E. Yeah. So now for this, then we'll do one simplification, and also this simplification also mentioned in earlier work, is that I use this bilinear double well potential. And now again, I restrict my attention to a slightly better functions with a better regularity. I only consider functions with a finitely many zeros. Let me just, in a sense that I just look at functions with finitely many pieces of monotonic regimes. And then, so this is a restriction, but then I can also show that start with any function if it is a stationary with a low enough energy, then the function, then the stationary point automatically has that kind of better regularity result. So without restriction, I'll just consider this. Okay, so the reason I consider this bilinear double well potential is that the order Lagrange equations becomes a linear constant coefficient differential equations. So you can treat it as a PDE or ODE. Actually, I will treat it as ODE in many of the calculations. Then this linear equation is coupled with some jump conditions at the point where the U sub x changes sign. Okay? So then there are some obvious modification for the second variational function, but then these are not so crucial. So I will just use this kind of original definition, at least symbolically, for this first variation and then the second variation. So then, as I say, the main result is that we want to characterize the stable structures, and the stable structures are periodic. So now, what are these periodic structures? And the way to construct this is take any period that you wish, and then you consider solve this order Lagrange equation on this period, such that it's monotonically increasing. And this can be solved because it's ODE, constant coefficient. You can solve it by characteristic methods. Okay. Then the periodic structures is just you do the periodic versions of this. Okay. So this is the periodic structures that I'm talking about. Okay. And I denote this by Q of L. L is the period. And then this transition, I call it an interface. And then the region where U sub x is 1 or minus 1, and I call it a phase or interval, and so forth. Okay. So this is the structures that I will concentrate on. So the main theorem. So I will show you a slightly more descriptive statement, and I'll give you a graphical statement. So now for epsilon small enough in this limiting regime, if you take any periodic structures, okay, if the period, there's some technical reason that the period cannot be too long, and if the period is long enough compared with this length scale, then this periodic structure is stable in the sense that it has a positive second variation. And on the other hand, if this period is too short, in the sense that this period is shorter than certain constants, then this periodic structure becomes unstable. Okay? And so the first two statements shows that given any periodic structures, the stability can be captured by the length of the period. Okay? And then the slightly harder statement is I can also have a reverse statement. Given any structure which you know that is periodic, and also it has a low enough energy, then I can show that this is exactly periodic. Okay, so positivity of second variation plus the energy is low enough, then the structure is periodic. Okay? Yeah? No. Okay. So right now the function space are assumed and can be proved in those better regularity class, but then the test function can be arbitrary H2. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will work too. Yeah. Okay. So this is a this statement try to relate the stability and the periods of the periodic structures. Okay. So then a more graphical description of this result is the following. You look at energy landscape of this profile of this energy function. So now here you have an infinite dimensional function space as a functional it's a function space. Then the vertical axis is the energy. So global minimizers has been studied by Stefan Müller, and he showed that the global minimizers is periodic and exactly given by that function, that kind of functions. And the typical length scale is of order epsilon to the 1/3. So this is for global minimizers. And combined with the previous statement, it shows that this energy landscape is very rugged. There are lots of local minimizers, and all the local minimizers are given by these periodic structures. Okay. Moreover, if you take these periodic structures, if the L is small enough, then this periodic structure is going to lose its stability, and the exact crossover between stability and instability is of this order. It has been captured quite up to the order, is quite accurate. Okay. So in terms of stable structures, then this picture completely characterizes the behavior of the stationary solution in the regime of low enough energy. Okay. And of course, then furthermore, this picture is more simplistic to describe the unstable critical points. There will be a lot of unstable critical points joining to potentially there will be a lot of unstable critical points joining to local minimizers. Okay, so but I will give you some indications of how the patterns will look like. Okay. So now what are the structures of unstable critical points? So by mountain pass or saddle points techniques, then between any two local minimizers, for sure there must be a critical point. But then how to give a complete characterization of the saddle point is not completely clear yet. But then using the bilinear double well potential, and then I can have explicit constructions of some explicit examples of unstable critical points. So for example, the original stable solution is of periodic structures, and then you can introduce new interfaces at the top of the function, or you can also introduce new interfaces in the middle of the phase. Okay. And both of these, the links, typical links here of the new phases of the new structures, have satisfied different kind of scaling. Okay. So now let me just put it here. So then let me explain a little bit more the phenomenology of these critical points. So this the formation of critical points exactly correspond to the nucleation of new interfaces. Okay. So for example, if you take a stationary point, there's an interface here. Okay. So let me take two structures. And the critical points that I have constructed explicitly is to introduce two more new interfaces. Okay. So either the new interfaces are constructed or introduced at the original location of the interface or in the middle of the phase. Okay. And it turns out there is a this spacing between the new interfaces corresponds to the optimum size of the nucleation. It cannot be arbitrary, and then it satisfies this kind of scaling. And why it satisfies this scaling and the precise physical reason, I think it's still not completely clear to me, even though I can show you a computation by hand to show that why this is true. But let's just accept the fact that the scaling of this critical nucleus size depends on where you put the new nucleus with respect to the original phase. Okay. Let me put it here. So these are done by explicit construction because we use the bilinear double well potential. Okay, so now before we outline the proof, there's a comparison with the Allen-Kahn equation. Okay. So the energy landscape for Allen-Kahn equation is much simpler in the sense that the global minimizers of this Allen-Kahn equation is the only stable solution, and it has only one interface. This is done by Carr, Gurdin, and Slamrod. And then there are many other critical points. All of them are periodic, and they are unstable. Okay. But then the interesting thing is that the instability is very small, so in some sense it's metastable. So in numerics, you see many various sort of stable structures with non-periodic patterns, but then in fact they are very unstable, and the interface will move with exponentially small speed. Okay? So this is related to the fact that the eigenvalues of these structures are exponentially small. Okay? So they interact basically with a zero. The interface basically do not interact with each other. Which one? Who? Okay. So a car, Gurdin, and some, they have with a volume constraint to introduce this. Okay, for this Allen-Kahn, functional, to get a one interface, you do need to have a volume constraint. Yeah. Without this, then certainly it's a constant one or minus one. It's a state global solution. Yeah. Okay, so this is for the Allen-Kahn. At the interface, they interact with with each other exponentially small. But then in the current problem, the interesting thing is that the interface, they do interact with each other and interact with quite, the interaction is quite important and quite strong. And then the eigenvalues correspond to algebraically small orders. And so in theory, if you try to study stability or instability, you want to characterize the eigenvalues. So even though in the proof, I didn't quite to characterize the eigenvalues, but then in spirit, it is the same thing. From one sum of the estimate, we can show that the lambda is exactly of algebraic order. So this is the main difference between this current functional and then the Allen-Kahn functional. So now the setup of the proof is the following. So first of all, we'll just try to use some soft argument at the beginning by low energy assumption. Okay. So you can just tackle the Euler Lagrange equation using energy estimate with some soft bounds on the functional. Then you will see that the picture I draw you is roughly correct. The function has a sawtooth that you have to make a rapid transition between 1 and minus 1. The derivative make a rapid transition. And the width of the transition is of length epsilon. And then there are certain length scale between the distance between two interfaces. So, but that's all you can do using this first variation or the Euler Lagrange equation. So you can say that there are a whole bunch of interfaces situated, located at different locations. But then if you want to say more about how are they located with respect to each other, then you need to have a more estimate. So then to get more estimate of the structures, then we need to look at the second variation. Okay. So given a sawtooth structure, and a priori we don't know where are the locations of these corners, then we want to vary this. And then I think so far, when you try to study the stability of this, there's a trick consistently used in many places. It's just try to, the only variation of interest is just try to move the interface to see what happens. Okay. So here we use the same trick. We move the interface and then use this test function to construct a second variation. So now we can group together the contribution from the second variation into two terms. One is the destabilizing, is that the energy of the interface will change, which is a negative contribution. And then there's a positive term, the stabilizing, which is of order L. So then you have the stability and instability is the looking at the balance between these two terms. And this, again, is intimately related to the relative locations of the L and then of the length, which of the adjacent length of the interface, of the intervals. Okay. So how do you compare these two terms is the main, I think it's not immediately clear from the beginning. Okay, so an outline of the proof. So I've streamlined the proof a little bit from last time. Okay, talk about this. So the stability of periodic structures of long intervals. So if I take any periodic structures of the intervals is long enough, with it's short relatively with order one, but it's long enough compared with epsilon log epsilon. So we can prove this the stability of periodic structures by a lemma by Stefan Müller, and he considered the energy functional, the corresponding energy functional of the structures of one period of length L. He just minimized this, and you assume the period or the function is monotonically increasing. So if you consider this function, if L is small enough for some technical reason, but then bigger than this order, then this minimum energy is of order 2 epsilon plus L cubed divided by 12. So this is the 2 epsilon comes from the fact that you have an interface, sharp transition. And then the L cubed is just you assume that come from this integral of U squared. If the function is of straight line, then you just integrate it, then this is order L cubed. And then with sufficient sufficient estimate, you can show that the derivative is L. Basically, you can take the derivative, you can forget about the epsilon contribution. And then second derivative is just L squared. And in particular, this shows that this function, as a function of L, is a convex. Okay? If you just look at the structure, the energy of one period. So basically, by Jensen's inequality, you can show that periodic structures are stable. But more specifically, you can also do it in the way that I'm going to show you. So now here we have this function is convex. So now you can try to vary the periodic structures. So the green is the original periodic structure. We vary in some arbitrary way, okay. And then this length is going to vary. But then since this is the perturbed energy functional, the function is perturbed, and you look at energy, and it's strictly bigger than the energy of the new length, And then here you can see that the second derivative is for sure bigger than the second derivative of the function. Okay? And now you can just do the calculus of computing the second derivative. And since the double well, second derivative is positive and is convex, and this one, the second derivative or second variation is positive. And this shows that the periodic structures with long enough energy, long enough length is stable. Okay. So, and then how about the instability of periodic structures with short intervals? This is not too hard, given the formulas we have achieved. So you just move the interface. That's basically, again, the consistent trick that's been used. So then, again, there's this destabilizing term and stabilizing term. And you see that if L is short enough, then this negativity is going to overcome the positivity from the integral of phi squared, so it becomes unstable. Okay. So this part is basically is not too hard to do. Okay. So then the hard part is, how do you prove that given a stable structure, then it is periodic? So then to prove this, we really need to consider lots of possibilities of the stable of the spatial structures. So now we'll try to do it by contradiction. So assume the structure is not periodic, then we'll show that it is unstable. Then that's basically show that periodic stable structures must be periodic. Okay. So let's see. So then there are several steps. So one way is that if I assume all the interfaces are far away from each other, then basically I can just move by hand, construct simple test function that can move the interface and show that this spatial pattern must be almost periodic or roughly equal. The interface must be roughly equidistant from each other. Okay. So if not all the interfaces or intervals are long enough, then there must be a long one, or there must be a short one adjacent to a long one. Okay. By the low energy assumption, we can exclude that all the intervals are short. So there must be a short one adjacent to a long one. Then in this case, again, we replace the same trick as moving the interface and try to see the second variation. And again, it's combined has a negative contribution and positive contribution. And so again, we come to the point that we want to characterize which one is bigger. So this is the place where the interaction between the interfaces becomes very important. Okay. So for this, again, there's a really so far I don't know any physical reason why the result comes out this way, even though it comes out computation by hand after a month. So the way we look at the interaction between interfaces is computing this propagation map, or in other literature people call it time map. So I treat this order Lagrange equation as an ODE. I try to relate the boundary condition from one side to another and try to see what are the, so I try to compute the map to the propagate the information from one end to another. Okay. So now if you have two interfaces adjacent to each other, then you try to see how the information is propagated from one interval to another. And because of some jump condition, then there is some kind of constraint to see how the length relate to each other. And it turns out for this that if you have a short interval adjacent to a long interval, then the length of the short interval cannot be arbitrary, and you must satisfy this kind of scaling. Okay? And with this scaling, then you can see that this is negative. Okay? So this is one step which I think it's tricky, and yet there's no other way I can explain it further other than looking at this interaction between interfaces. Okay, so these are the quick proof or quick outline of the proof. Okay, so then let me just mention that with this, then basically we boil down to the consideration of roughly periodic or nearly periodic functions, and we want to show that it is exactly periodic. So this, again, we resort to implicit function theorem, and essentially shows that almost periodic structures fall into the basins of attraction of periodic structures. So there's, again, the approach is make use of the explicit construction of the solutions. So the disadvantage of this is that we make use of the bilinear functionals, bilinear double well potentials, and then make use of a lot of explicit constructions. Okay? And then as a further investigation of this is that we'll try to search for some unstable structures and the critical point of these functionals. And I think one thing that interests me is that this idea of between the connection between regularization and selection mechanism is that if you look at the original functional, as epsilon goes to zero, it can be formally shown that gamma converges to a simplified functional. Okay? And for this simplified functional, then you can everything becomes a combinatorial problem, and basically also mentioned by Steve Watson. Okay? But then for this simplified functional, there are lots of critical points. You can arbitrarily introduce many new interfaces, arbitrary where you, no matter how many you want and as you wish where you put them, in the middle or at the top and so forth. There's no selection mechanism for how you introduce the critical points. But then as long as you have a positive epsilon, then there's a high constraint of where how many intervals, how many short intervals you can put in between and where you put them. Okay, so this, I think, is an interesting thing to investigate. And of course, for the higher dimensional problem and how to understand the landscape in similar functionals and then the time-dependent problems, I think these are also many problems to be done too. Okay. So thank you very much.